Welcome back to the Unplayable Podcast. Here we are covering Australia's Test Match Tour of New Zealand. My name is Josh Schoenfinger, joined by Andrew Ramsey, who is covering that test on the ground. He's just moved down to Christchurch for the second test. Rambo, how's it going down there on the South Island?
Delightful, Josh, and lovely to be with you again. It's not quite as cold as it is in Durham-Sharlow, I gather, for the England-India test, but it's a bit chilly here. It was about 4 degrees, I think, when we headed off to train this morning at a bit before 9 a.m., but they're predicting a warm spell for the test match, which will be good news for the people who flock to the grass banks at Hagley Oval and enjoy a bit of a warm weekend.
Have you followed in the players' footsteps and enjoyed a bit of golf in between the two test matches?
Haven't managed to do the golf. As you know, the work commitments of these two are unrelenting.
Of course, yeah.
And therefore, it's just been, I've been chained to the keyboard, only been let out for a sort of half hour and every now and then to do some laundry. But they have been enjoying their golf. They played yesterday pretty much as soon as they got off the plane from Wellington, and some of them complained about the cold winds down here on the South Island to the extent that Mitchell Stark said there'd been a request put out for more hand warmers by the support staff. As you know, they like to keep those little, whatever they are, vermiculite packets, I think they keep in their pockets that you can just break the special magic liquid and it warms your hands up. So the fact they have been needed for golf gives you some idea of how keen they are.
Yeah, they certainly love it, that's for sure. Tell me about Hagley Oval as well. I mean, you've been there today. It's very much a traditional New Zealand ground, isn't it? They don't play at Lancaster Park anymore or one of those grounds because of all the earthquakes that often hit Christchurch. But what can we expect to see for Hagley Oval?
It's interesting. I think anyone who knows Karen Rolton Oval in Adelaide will have some idea of what Hagley's like. It's much bigger. It's about as big as the MCG in terms of surface area of the playing ground. But like Adelaide, Christchurch was designed by Colonel William Light, the famous surveyor. So it's, the city is ringed by parklands, and Hagley Oval, when, as you say, Lancaster Park became unusable because of the quake, became a sort of pop-up boutique ground. And because it's parklands, they can't have permanent structures there. So there's one clubhouse that has the team dressing rooms and a function centre and a couple of broadcast boxes, but then everything else is a temporary site, including the TV scaffolding at the far end of the ground. The media tent is quite literally a tent. The corporate sponsorship boxes are quite literally tents, and everyone else just gathers on a picnic rug or a fold-up chair on the grass bank. So it's really lovely ground. It's ringed by this grass mound that goes all the way around and set in the parkland. So it's pretty unique in terms of world cricket grounds, a bit like the basin was. And it should have a nice sort of festival feel to it for the test match.
Yeah, fantastic. Are we expecting same sort of crowds as the first test? It looked like it was packed every day that we looked on TV.
Yeah, I'm told that it's pretty close to sold out for all 4 days. Obviously, I don't sell tickets for day five like test matches in Australia. I think capacity here is probably about 5,000 to 6,000, depending on how big your picnic rug is. Yeah, they should be a good crowd. It's sort of a special milestone game with both Kane Williamson and Tim Southey celebrating their 100th test matches. So a bit of parochial flavour should get a few fans along. And there's also a lot of Australian tour groups here, as I discovered in Wellington. So that helps to balance out the crowd support a bit.
All right, so listeners, keep an eye on the grassy banks there at Christchurch because you might see Rambo in a camp chair tapping away on his laptop if the weather's nice enough. We'll get to Williamson and Southey's milestones in just a second, but Mitch Stark, he is coming up to a massive milestone of his own. He's on 354 test wickets, only one behind Australian great Dennis Lilly. And Stark spoke to the media on Wednesday and he was asked about his longevity and dealing with injuries and the rigours of international cricket. And he actually got some pretty funny advice early in his career. Let's have a listen to what that was.
I remember early doors. I think it would have been my first or second tour and I was still sort of learning what all those pains were, and obviously the reports get around to from physios to coaches, and sort of got told to harden the F up a little bit. So Timmy Nielsen probably made me aware of that early doors, and yeah, I think there's times where obviously there's plenty of times you need to be honest with the medical staff, but other times you've got to know when to push through things.
So a few hard truths there from Tim Nielsen has served Stark pretty well in the long run, actually. Just 2 wickets, that's all he needs to overtake Dennis Lilly and move into fourth spot all time on the Australian Test wicket takers list. I didn't forget Nathan Lyon that time. Obviously, Shane Warne and Glenn McGrath above him as well. And now the question mark turns to, can he catch Glenn McGrath as well, Rambo?
It's a fair way away, isn't it? I mean, McGrath's in the 500s. I think Nathan Lyon's got him in his sights. And he's played 40 Test matches more than Mitch Stark, even though they started around the same time. It's obviously Mitch has had those injury issues and sort of the grind of fast bowling that can keep your match aggregate down a bit. I think that'd be a bit of a stretch. I think 100 test matches is not unrealistic. He's on, I think this will be his 89th coming up here in Christchurch. So you think they've got next test commitment is 5 against India in Australia and then a couple in the West Indies, and then I don't think there's any more until, well, a couple in Sri Lanka, sorry. So might be the next Ashes tour in Australia if he gets to 100. But I was looking through some numbers and everyone knows his ability to kind of strike with the new ball, but his strike rate across test cricket as a whole is quite extraordinary. I think, you know, for guys who've taken 350 test wickets, of which there's less than 20, it's only Malcolm Marshall, Dale Steyn, and one other who eludes me for a moment, who's got a better strike rate across that time. That would be one. There's a trivia question for people. If they can guess the third one, then they can write it in on the back of a postcard and pick an elaborate prize. But it's pretty remarkable that, given that he's a bowler who relies a lot on swing and that doesn't always swing, to strike as often as he does, it really puts him among the greats.
Yeah, and it really feels like earlier in his career he had a bit of a reputation as an unreliable, inconsistent bowler, but his numbers across the last maybe 3 or 4 years have just been incredible, really. I mean, consistent and, as you say, striking in all conditions, really. He's certainly developed that wobble seam delivery to good effect, especially in test cricket. We know Louis Cameron, he's a huge fan of that delivery, and Stark has been one of the main exponents of it, especially in the last couple of years. But one thing Stark hasn't done is play a test match in Christchurch. And this was his answer when asked what it was like to return to the scene of Hagley Oval.
Sitting up in a tent over there watching the girls win the World Cup here. So that's been my only experience of being here. So, obviously a really good day for Australian cricket, that one. Girls beating England in a World Cup is always good. And Elise obviously scored 170. So pretty good memories from this ground so far.
Yeah, that was a massive day for Australian cricket. That one, the final of the 2022 Women's ODI World Cup. I've watched those Healy highlights a few times, I've got to say. Rambo, why don't we jump over to the New Zealand squad? There's been a bit of chat over the last couple of days that there's unrest in the Kiwi squad after Neil Wagner was forced into retirement, supposedly. Do you have any update on what's happening over there with the Black Caps?
No, it almost seems a bit of a mystery. It was a couple of quotes from Ross Taylor, the former New Zealand captain, who I think was interviewed on a television show or a stream show in Australia, and gave some thoughts about Tim Southee and the way that he got out in the Wellington Test. He didn't think that was it set a great example as a captain, but he did hold out to long on, sort of his second last wicket to fall on the last day at Wellington, but it was just before lunch on day 4. I don't think anyone seriously expected Tim to bat the best part of 5 sessions to save a test or put his team in a potentially winning position. So I think, you probably, in hindsight, may have regretted the shot choice simply because he didn't clear the fence, the ball, before he'd gone for 6. So you can't say he wasn't hitting them well. So that seemed to be one point of contention. The other one was the Wagner circumstances around Neil Wagner's kind of inclusion in the squad with no intention to play him, which seemed to force his hand and made him consider and announce his retirement. I don't think there's much doubt that was pretty messy the way they seemed to handle that. And they explained it away as saying they wanted to give him a chance to be around the group to celebrate his career. But it did seem odd to name a guy in a test squad for two matches with no intention of playing him in either, and then release him before the second test, even though they lost one of their frontline fast bowlers, Will O'Rourke, to a hamstring injury. You'd think that if he was considered good enough to be next in line in the squad, that he may have hung around to come to Christchurch and be in consideration, but they'd already announced that he was retiring, so he was at the airport flying in a different direction when the team went to the South Island yesterday. So it's curious, and I can understand Ross Taylor raising those things, but I'm not sure that he's been privy to anything of his unrest. Kane Williamson was asked about it at his media conference today, and in typically diplomatic Kane fashion, he said that maybe Ross Taylor knows more about what's going on in the dressing room than Kane does, because he wasn't aware of anything. So I think maybe, yes, that sums it up in very few words.
I mean, I must say, it did seem a bit odd, and it also felt like at certain stages during that first test, New Zealand could have used Neil Wagner, because Cameron Green and Josh Hazlewood's partnership, for one, was pretty frustrating, and I'm sure they would have liked a bit of Wagner short stuff to get things moving along, but unfortunately they didn't have it. So they will move on to the second test, as we have said, with Tim Southee and Kane Williamson both playing their 100th test match. I imagine that's the first time that we've had two players playing in their 100th test match in the same match. Rambo, off the cuff, is that something you're aware of?
That's a very good speculative piece, Josh. I think that could be the second part of the two-part trivia question if you've got room on the bottom of your postcard. My initial reaction would be yes. I can't remember it happening before, but you never know, test cricket somewhere in the annals of history, there's probably something stuck in a game that we were unaware of. But it'll be a big occasion. Tim Southee's pretty remarkable in that there's not many fast bowlers that get to 100 test matches simply by dint of the nature of the work they do, as Mitchell Starc was alluding to earlier today. So for a guy who came into the team, I think as Kane Williamson said today, that he pretty much straight from school, Tim Southee, and didn't know a lot about not just international cricket, but international sport, because apparently he said he'd never been to a gym until he first represented New Zealand. They had to try and get him in there to bulk up a bit.
Wow.
So he's a pretty remarkable story, Tim, and is in line to be one of the very few, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's only four others who've played 100 matches in all three international formats, and Tim's very close. I think he just needs a couple of white ball games to get him into that group. And the other four, who other people can name on their postcard, are all batters. So it kind of underscores how remarkably resilient he's been.
Yeah, that's a fantastic stat, actually. 378 test wickets in 99 matches for Southee. Fantastic. And interesting to see that his highest score is still 77 not out, which he scored on debut against England many, many years ago, included a barrage of sixes down the ground. I can't remember which New Zealand ground it was at, but there were some big, big hits for somebody who's never been in the gym. And his career has featured many, many more sixes after that as well. So great career for Tim Southee, now captaining his country. And another man who has captained his country, of course, is Kane Williamson. 100 tests coming up for him. He's had a phenomenal record in test cricket. We all know he's averaging 55. But against Australia, there has been some talk this week that an average of 37 only against the Aussies is a bit underwhelming. Is that a blight on his record, Rambo, or does it not matter in the grand scheme of things?
I guess the way these great players are judged is often their form away from home. And Kane did have a summer in Australia where he made 200s when they 2015-16 season, when they put on a pile of runs in Perth. I think Ross Taylor almost made 300 over there, and Kane made hundreds in Perth and in Brisbane. So he can play, but you're right. I had a look at his numbers. I think his last 13 innings against Australia, he's only passed 50 once, and that was 97 at the previous test at Hagley Oval, as you say, the Brendan McCullum benevolent day. So I think Kane would probably admit that he's underachieved a bit against Australia, and Nathan Lyon rather cheekily claimed after the Wellington test that he'd spotted something in Kane's technique that he had exploited successfully and would look to do so again. So interesting to see whether Kane's been able to remedy that flaw, if it in fact exists, and whether what will in all likelihood be his last test match against Australia, given the kind of paucity of games these two teams play against each other. It would be maybe a nice way to go out if he could find a score in his 100th test to write the record a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a pretty good preview of the second test in Christchurch between Australia and New Zealand. Andrew, thanks for joining us. Any parting predictions for how this series is going to wrap up?
Given that it's been more than 30 years since New Zealand beat Australia in New Zealand, I'm going out on a limb and say that that record won't be broken anytime soon. But having said that, if it is, I'll treat myself to a round of golf as punishment.
I think that's a good idea. Also, I guess before we leave, we should just quickly touch on the Australian camp. I mean, this has just gone under the radar, but there are no injuries or anything to worry about, are there? It should be an unchanged lineup, are we expecting?
No, I did check with the coach, Andrew McDonald, immediately after the first test at Wellington, and seemed to suggest that that was my only line of questioning is the fitness of his players. They're all at training today. The fast bowlers didn't do a lot. They bowled a little bit in the middle. Michael Nisa bowled in the nets, whereas Scott Boland was with the other big three, and Cameron Green and Mitchell Marsh sort of operating on one of the practice pitches out in the centre, which suggests that if someone wasn't fit, that he is the obvious one to come back in. But no, they're all fit well, and apart from cold hands from a couple of chilly rounds on the golf course, I think they're in tip-top nick, ready for Friday morning.
Great stuff, Rambo. Yeah, the second and final test starts on Friday, March 8. You can catch it on Foxtel and KO Sports. You can also listen on ABC and SEN radios if that's how you like to consume. This has been another episode of the Unplayable podcast brought to you by Qantas, the spirit of Australia. We're going to have a few more episodes before the season is out, wrapping up the Sheffield Shield and a few other bits and pieces. I'm also going to drop the answer to those trivia questions in the show notes if you fancy yourself at a bit of trivia. Thanks for listening, and until next time, enjoy the cricket.